Welcome in to the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. And this week's episode, we'll be discussing NFL Week 12, as just concluded last night. We'll discuss the Thanksgiving week, NFL Week 13. We'll have our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack, coming off a winning week. We will talk about the NBA as we are roaring into almost the time where it starts to matter. And we'll have our college football two-minute drill. Now, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, and also follow the social media handle at JTime Sports. I repeat, at JTime Sports for all of your favorite teams' needs, along with your enemies' needs, so you can have all the info to talk noise to your friends. Now, as always, sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just In Time Sports.
Life is good. Life is good.
Look. This is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die is where I'm from, I can't replace it. Some people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN better watch out cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake.
He can never show you fake.
Look, if you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight.
He gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you.
This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes.
Come and get it,
he gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the show. Welcome into the Just In Time Sports Podcast, Season 5, Episode 30. We are back after last week being off. The YouTube show is uploaded. We will definitely, of course, as always, you can go to the social media pages, get in the link tree, go to the YouTube page, because the newest episode of the JTS After Dark Podcast, the YouTube show featuring Jai from Hey Jai, produced by IMS Productions, is up and up on YouTube. So make sure you guys definitely check that out. But if you're an audio show regular, welcome back. Welcome back into you. Thanksgiving week, man. It's a huge week in the NFL. Happy holidays to you and your family. For those who celebrate Thanksgiving, congratulations. Thanksgiving's here. For those who don't, enjoy the week off from work or the couple of days off from work that comes with this holiday in America. But let's jump right into NFL Week 12. Last start with Monday Night Football last night. It was a battle of two of the young guns in the NFL. Talk about two of the top five talents at the quarterback position left in the NFL with Herbert and Lamar Jackson. For those of you who are curious, the other three of those talents to me is Patrick Mahomes, is Joe Burrow, and is Josh Allen. I mean, you can make an argument for Caleb Williams as far as raw talent. Haven't seen enough of it. You can make an argument where Jaden Daniels as far as raw talent. Started off hot, fell off. We'll get into Jaden Daniels in a bit. You can make an argument for Kyler Murray as far as his ability to throw and run. But as far as the top five guys who we've seen proof of and we have seen just the raw ability of, those were two of the top five last night between Justin Herbert and Lamar Jackson. And they put on a show. But ultimately, it came down to which organization is just a little bit better right now. It was the Harbaugh Bowl, the first time since Jim has returned that they have faced off. It's Jim's, of course, first season with the Chargers after winning the national championship last year with the Michigan Wolverines. John continues his winning ways over brother Jim. John's the older brother, and he's 3-0. He got him in Jim's first season in the NFL. He got him in the Super Bowl. Now he gets him again in the regular season. Just go through some numbers really quickly. Very pedestrian day as far as total for Lamar Jackson, but his QBR and his passer rating shows the difference. Lamar was 16-22, 177, two touchdowns, no picks. one sack, but his QBR of 86.8 on a scale of 0 to 100 with 50 being average, and he had a passer rating of 126.5 with a max of 158.3. Derrick Henry was a very Derrick Henry-like game. 24 carries, a buck 40, no touchdowns. He had a big run of 27. He had it actually, I think, on a third down or a fourth down. It was a very important down when John Harbaugh starts rolling the dice on these downs. Derrick Henry delivered. Justice Hill had a good night. Four carries, 51 yards. Most of the came on a 51-yard touchdown run. Switching over to the Chargers, Justin Herbert, 21-36, 218, no touchdowns, no picks. QBR of 70, passer rating of 75. Dobbins, I think injury changed the game, because Dobbins, before he goes out, is 6 carries, 40 yards, a long of 17. I think that ultimately changes the game. I think that takes away the run game, because the next best run on the team was Justin Herbert. You didn't get anything out of Hassan Haskins or Gus Edwards as far as the run game is concerned. But now that we got the numbers out of the way, that was a game that, again, that came down to me just a structural game. First of all, like I said, Austin Eckler gets hurt. Not Austin Eckler. Oh, man, I just said his name, too. Man, I can't think of that guy's name anymore. One second. J.K. Dobbins, I'm sorry, gets hurt. And it really throws off the remainder of the game for the Chargers. You can tell they were going to do a lot of play action running. They were running the ball really effectively. They have the old Ravens offensive coordinator in the building. He's really good at running. His name escapes me, but he's really good at run schemes. His run schemes are elite, and they were really using that and building that to build in Justin Herbert play actions, hitting a lot of Lad McConkeys, and so on and so forth. And they were just really building that game. And then when Dobbins goes out, you can tell that Greg Roman is his name. Greg Roman really was trying to figure it out with other backs. It just wasn't working. You never were in a position truly in the second half to where you could just say, okay, we're going to run the ball 8-7 times in a row with all these different run schemes, really allow Herbert to just be a dynamo in the play action. You know, especially after that last drive where, you know, they get in the field goal range and they get 14-13. To me, the Chargers just never felt like they were able to run the ball. Like I said, this is post-Dobbins injury, and it clearly showed. On the Ravens side of things, they got some things cleaned up, and I think they grew up a lot. They grew up a lot in confidence a little bit last night in terms of what they were looking at. The Ravens had one of the worst pass defenses in the league. Like, I talked to a lot of Ravens fans on a regular basis. One thing they constantly lament is the passing defense of the Baltimore Ravens. They talk about it all the time. And so not having Roquan Smith, having to lean more on guys that normally you wouldn't have to lean on, and your secondary stood up and killed one of the better quarterbacks in the league, relatively down. Like I say, compare rating on rating, Lamar was 87 and 127. Herbert was 70 and 75. So holding one of the better passing attacks down, really controlling what the Chargers are able to do. It also highlighted the lack of weapons for the Chargers. Ladd McConkey is easily the best receiver. Quentin Johnson easily should not be an NFL receiver. If he catches that pass, he probably hits his tail in the goalpost, and it's going to be a whole different conversation, right, that we're having right now. Him dropping that pass, it was on a third down. The Ravens come right back down and score a touchdown and go up two possessions, and the whole game changes. And it was a perfectly designed call. Greg Roman dialed it up perfectly. He got a lot of crossing routes, a mesh-ish concept through the middle against man coverage, which, for those of you who know football, it's, you know, a lot of crossing routes through man coverage. Quentin Johnson gets rubbed off. Boom, and hits him right in the hands, and he just drops it. I'm going to say the whole game has changed from that point on. And the Ravens do what the Ravens do. They get up on you, and they lean on you. And they leaned on him with Derrick Henry. They leaned on him with one of the bigger guards I've ever seen in my life. And they leaned on them with Ricard, the fullback. And he just kept leaning and kept leaning and kept leaning. And it drained the clock out and ultimately drained the Chargers' spirit. Now, Khalil Mack is talking about he wants to see them again because playing against Henry ain't that hard. 24 for a buck 40, says otherwise, but hey, he says he wants to see the Ravens again. So it's definitely something that's definitely could be a budding rivalry. I would enjoy seeing the brothers go at it, the Harbaugh brothers go at it repeatedly. It's something that you didn't see whenever Jim was in the first time, because Jim was in the NFC. So I think Jim was there like 6 years. He only played like twice, and one of them was in the Super Bowl. So now that Jim is in the AFC with John, hopefully we get more of these matchups. Make it a yearly thing. Come on, NFL, make it a yearly thing. It was in LA this time. Put it in Baltimore next year. You know, I would love to see him in the playoff game, you know, at Baltimore, conference championship game, when it goes to Super Bowl. That'd be cool. So I'm saying, like, you know, we get the opportunity to see that a little bit more. But shout out to the Baltimore Ravens for getting it done. So, a growing topic that I honestly didn't even think was ever going to be a topic. Bo Nix for MVP, for Offensive Rookie of the Year. I almost said MVP. Sheesh. For Offensive Rookie of the Year. That is a real conversation right now. The odds have come way down for Jaden Daniels, and they've gone way up for Bo Nix. And this is a real conversation that you're seeing on a lot of national platforms. This is a conversation that, again, I thought the Rookie of the Year race, hell, I said it, was over and done in week six. Because the only other person, because Bo Nix was horrible. Drake May wasn't starting yet. Caleb Williams was awful. And Jaden Daniels was in the MVP race. I thought Rookie of the Year was over. If I had to place my money on it, I'd still go Jaden Daniels. Because Jaden Daniels also means to me he's gonna be in a better position. Jaden Daniels could win. Okay, the Eagles exist, so he's not gonna win his division. But neither are the Broncos, because the Chiefs exist. I just think Jaden Daniels ultimately will win it. But Bo Nix has been incredibly impressive after an incredibly slow start. I mean, he started off awful, like god awful. Like, why are you in the NFL? Awful. It was bad. But over the last nine games, Nix has 90 total touchdowns, 2 interceptions. And there was another statistic. I'm trying to find it where it spoke about how he played since the first month of the season. Hold on. Let me see if I can find it real quick. And if I can't, just since week 10, which is over the past month or so. He's 4th in passing grade per PFF. Tied for the first in touchdowns, hadn't thrown a pick, with a passer rating that's 2nd in the league. And I'm trying to find... Oh, okay, got it. Bleacher Report posted it. In September, he was 1 touchdown, 4 picks, 2-2 record. Since September, 16 touchdowns, 2 picks, 5-3 record. He is looking a lot better over recently. Predictably, we spoke about on this show multiple times. If you don't believe me, if you're just new to the show, go back and listen to early episodes discussing Jaden Daniels. I said it repeatedly. I worried about Cliff Kingsbury. And my big worry with Cliff Kingsbury was, traditionally, post-Halloween, his offenses go to hell. Like, on schedule, they just fall off a map. Jaden Daniels has looked rough over the past month. Anybody know what happened a month ago? Halloween. The magic left. And Jaden Daniels has looked awful since that point. It just looks like everyone's catching up. Now, two to three things also could be working against Cliff Kingsbury. And it's not like it's, you know, this 12-year veteran quarterback who's a stud, and then Kingsbury showed up and kid's awful, and the guy's awful at the Halloween. No, there's stuff happening. That's not just, you know, not just Cliff Kingsbury. For instance, Jaden Daniels hurt his ribs. He has been appearing less willing to run down the field since the rib injury. Could be good for his career, but that was an element of the offense that Kingsbury, I'm sure, had begun to lean on, with the fact that at certain moments, Jaden's going to get us out of a bad spot and just take off running. Also, Jaden Daniels is a rookie. So as complex as maybe his Cliff Kingsbury system is, there's only so much he's able, regardless of how much football Jaden Daniels played, and regardless of how smart Jaden Daniels is, and so on and so forth, there is only so much he is able to put on a rookie, especially with so many pieces coming in and out. He's only able to put so much on a rookie quarterback. So maybe the schemes are finally being figured out. Not because of Cliff Kingsbury, but because, again, there's only so much you can put on a rookie quarterback. And also, general defensive tape. You can catch us off guard the first month-ish. Cool. After that, people study tape on both sides. So defensive coordinator, especially Goodwin, and he played a good one last week. Defensive coordinators on both sides are going to at some point figure out what is it you want to do. Now, maybe you can do something else. You can beat them a different way. But they're going to figure out why you're doing something, what you want to accomplish from it, and what is the ultimate goal from doing it. And I think that's playing a key role in Jaden Daniels' decline, is that, you know, maybe some of his pre-draft stuff was right when he's talking about he was a single read guy, where what he absolutely wanted wasn't open, he took off. So maybe that's coming to fruition at this moment. But hey, right now it is a legitimate discussion. Again, I still have Jaden Daniels because to me, MVP month doesn't a rough little stretch. Well, he's not awful. He's just not as great. Doesn't outweigh the god-awful stretch Bo Nix had at the beginning of the season. Saquon Barkley, is it finally time again for a running back to win MVP? And I don't mean Lamar Jackson. So, Saquon Barkley is ripping up the league. I think he's leading the league in rushing. Him and Derrick Henry are fighting over it, but he passed up Derrick Henry. And as of right now, he is currently on pace to win the NFL rushing title. He's on pace to win the NFL rushing title. He's on pace currently to break Eric Dickerson's 2105 rushing yards. If Saquon Barkley wins MVP, to me, it will be because he broke 2105 rushing. That's just, to me, I can make a Josh Allen argument. I can make a Lamar Jackson argument. To me, and I think Josh Allen has the biggest argument right now. To me, if Saquon Barkley goes 2106, he's league MVP. Period. He broke a league record. It reminds me when Peyton went 5,050. It wasn't even a discussion who was MVP. He broke the league record. When Brady in 07 like obliterated the yards record, it was not a discussion. So if Saquon goes 2106, he is league MVP. And the fact that we're even discussing a running back being league MVP is insane. Moreover, the fact that a team let that said running back walk for free and then dealt with a whole nother situation, the guy they actually paid who was terrible, and he could win MVP on the new team, is mind blowing. Saquon's already had his signature hurdle added into Madden. Madden has a bunch of other problems, but they added a hurdle. He would be the runaway MVP if the tush push didn't exist. I think I heard a stat yesterday that I think it's like 12 times or something like that, he's got it down to the one, and the very next play was a tush push. Like, if he, let's say 12 of those plays, half of them become Saquon touchdowns, he's running away with the MVP and hiding with it. It's his to lose. But because he doesn't have the touchdown numbers due to the tush push, it's a discussion with, again, I think Josh Allen is probably his biggest, I think it's his biggest thing, his biggest challenger to winning MVP at a running back position. And then a couple of team notes. The Vikings and the Chargers. To me, my Super Bowl pick right now, Vikings and Chargers, continue to find ways to win. And that's why I have them as Super Bowl picks. They just find ways. I think the Vikings' biggest challenger is the Eagles. I think the Chiefs' biggest challenger is themselves. I don't think if the Chiefs play their A game, they're going to lose. But I do think that, you know, they have one of these games where they're just rough and they're out of it and they're missing throws they should hit, they're dropping passes, and, you know, they're missing blocking assignments, and they beat themselves. I think they're beatable. So I think the Chiefs' biggest challenger is themselves. And I think that the Minnesota Vikings' biggest challenger is A, Sam Darnold, B, the Philadelphia Eagles. I love Sam Darnold. I really do. But it's something about having Sam Darnold. I don't think he's just ready yet to lead into Super Bowl. Now, the Vikings, perfect scenario, he does. And then you find something to do with J.J. McCarthy, and you honestly don't care. However, if Darnold plays really well, even in the playoffs, you lose in the divisional round. And you lose, 34-31. Darnold's in a freaking shootout. And, the Eagles, for instance, get him at the buzzer. Now, what do you do? But if he goes to the Super Bowl, I think he's starting next season. Regardless of which, that is my Super Bowl pick currently, the Chiefs and the Vikings, because, again, they just find ways to win. And that is a major part of the NFL and of making a playoff run is you just got to find ways to win games. And then the Tennessee Titans and the Dallas Cowboys pull off upsets. Again, the Titans, they handled the Texans. Something's seriously going on with C.J. Stroud. He's had a horrible, month of football. And then the Dallas Cowboys, in one of the wildest games you will ever see, beat the Commanders. Let's think about Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels in that fourth quarter looked like the Jaden Daniels of old. That game was insane. In the fourth quarter, you had two Cowboy kick return touchdowns, a couple of miracle Washington Commanders touchdowns, including a 86-yard of the Scary Terry that the kicker, Seibert, proceeds to miss the extra point on, which directly leads to the second Cowboys kick return for touchdown. Because I believe Austin Seibert, I think it's Austin, maybe Brandon, Seibert makes the extra point, 27-27, with I think it's 40-some-odd seconds left. I think the Cowboys take a knee. They don't risk it with Cooper Rush. As wild as the game was going, they get out of the quarter and they go to overtime. But that's also incredibly logical and something no one's ever accused Mike McCarthy of being. So who knows what Mike would have done. But that game was absolutely insane. But they pull off the upset as well over the Washington Commanders. Now, moving into some news. Daniel Jones has officially cleared waivers after being released per his request from the New York Giants. He apparently will have several options to choose from. He's already said no to the Raiders. He is potentially looking to join, from what all reports are saying, a contender, which is interesting, kind of for two reasons. Number one, if he joins a contender, let's say it's a playoff game, that contender loses their quarterback, now Daniel Jones is in the playoffs. But it also would showcase a potential Sam Darnold-like resurgence. Sam Darnold, high draft pick. He didn't get the second contract, but high draft pick. Rocky road early. Goes into Kyle Shanahan's building with the 49ers. Gets a glowing review from the 49ers. That's how you land in the Vikings building. And you are the starting quarterback for a hell of a playoff team. Also, Baker Mayfield. Also, high draft pick, this time from Cleveland, goes and sits in the same building. Who does Baker go to? Man, he ends up goes to sit with the Rams and Sean McVay. With Sean McVay, glowing review, goes to Tampa. Now look at him. So I think he's looking at that path as a potential path of success. Work out a high draft pick, kind of a cluster F as far as around me. I leave, I go to a grown-up, I go to an adult. Someone, that's going to recommend me highly, and then I can move on and go get a bag in a starting position. Daniel Jones has made $108 million in his career, so sitting behind someone for pennies on a dollar at the chance of another big deal is worth it to Daniel Jones. Aaron Rodgers is a mess. He's played horrible. The GM has been fired. He apparently has a rift with the owner. Now, he has stated that is vastly untrue and vastly untrue with his relationship with owner Woody Johnson. Reportedly, however, Christopher Johnson, who's the little brother, loves Aaron Rodgers. So maybe Aaron could be potentially trying to maneuver his way into a starting spot under Chris, due to the fact of Woody, the current owner, is expected to resume or take his role as ambassador to England under the new Donald Trump administration. So that means brother Chris would have to take over the organization on a day-to-day basis. Chris and Aaron have a great relationship. Speaking on the Pat McAfee show, doing his Wednesday spot, Roger said, these have been two of the best years of my life. As much as it's been frustrating and difficult, it's been two really beautiful years. Playing in New York would obviously be my first choice if I want to play. So now he's going to the old Brett Favre playbook. If I do this, If I do this, I want to be here. If. And that was the game Aaron Rodgers played, was a whole lot of if. He held Green Bay over the barrel for years due to if. And then when he went to the Jets, he did the Jets. Same thing. If. Because I think passively, potentially, Rodgers wants to work under Chris, not under Woody. I think this is the way of doing it. Malik Nabers speaks out against the organization, the Giants, saying that it may not have been a quarterback thing. The team plays soft as bleep. I would agree. I think that potentially Brian Daboll is losing the locker room. And I always, much as I like Brian Daboll, I said it before and I'll say it again. Whenever players feel bold enough, especially, you know, young, old, skill, line, it doesn't matter. When those guys feel bold enough to openly question the organization from a decision-making standpoint or the team from a schematic or effort standpoint, that coach or management has lost respect, and when it comes to grown men, has lost them in order to try and lead them. So the fact that Malik Nabers did this is not a good sign for Brian Daboll. And then two torn pecs. Brandon Graham told the media post-game he's out for the season due to a torn pec. And Jalen Petcher, safety from the Houston Texans, has a partially torn pec, and he's expected to miss multiple weeks. But up next, we will discuss NFL Week 13. Welcome back to the show, and we're staying on the NFL. We're going to jump in the NFL Week 13, and we're going to start off with the Thanksgiving Day triple header. If I remember correctly, it goes Bears-Lions, Giants-Cowboys, Dolphins-Packers. We're going to start off with Bears and Lions. This game is in our Jack's Pack. Of course, when the game's in our Jack's Pack, we don't pick it. However, this is the only Thanksgiving Day game in our Jack's Pack. So, we're just going to discuss it really quickly. Bears go to Lions. Now, as always, the traditional Thanksgiving Day hosts are Lions and Cowboys. Now, this game used to be a game nobody wanted to play. That's the reason why the Cowboys and Lions are grandfathered into it every year, why they host it every year. Because this game was a game nobody wanted to play. It wasn't fun. So, traditionally, Thursday night football, Black Friday football, Saturday NFL, like, wasn't happening. Like, everybody played on Sunday. Monday was a thing, but nobody played on Thursday. You know what I'm saying? Like, Thursday wasn't a day. Like, that wasn't a thing. So when the NFL started highlighting Thanksgiving Day games, they sent it out to the whole league almost as a who wants to do it. Nobody really wanted to. The Cowboys and the Lions said sure. And so now they've done it every year. And for years, that was the standalone games. It was Lions at noon, Cowboys at 3, end of Thanksgiving Day football. And now the NFL has added a third window because teams have realized that's a primetime game. First of all, we're already playing Thursday night football anyway, right? But Thanksgiving, usually, most people are off the next day. If you're a school teacher, if you're in schools, government, whatever, usually you're off the next day. So that third window, that normal Thursday night football window, is wide open for a good game. So now teams are open doing it, whatever. So that's why the Lions and the Cowboys have it every year, for those of you who didn't know. But anyway, Bears go at Lions this year. Divisional game. This game is an important game. This game is a game that Bears lose, they're cooked. They're over with. As far as I just don't see a path for the Bears to get into the playoffs. Obviously, they can't win the division, right? The division's over. It is the Lions' division to lose. The division's over. But I do believe that in the NFC, and I'm going to go to the playoff tab. Sorry. In the NFC right now, the Detroit Lions are 10-1. The Bears are 4-7. It's an elimination game for the Bears. The Bears lose this game, it's over. I mean, it's as good as dead. The season's over. For a lot of people's, especially in the betting community, a lot of people's pick, dark horse pick, and again, it could have been due to the financials, but the dark horse pick for a lot of NFC championship game contenders for the Bears, could, their season could be over on Thanksgiving Day. It could be dead. And the Detroit Lions, they're looking to continue to roll. Certain teams don't blow people out. They win the game, they just don't blow people out. They always feel like, man, they're a play away or two plays away from losing the game. They just don't blow people out. And the Detroit Lions, however, are not one of those people. Like, at a certain point in the NFL, and you don't really see it as, you see it more in college, but at a certain point in the NFL, you pull up. Who did Detroit play recently? They scored like 7-for-7 or something like that. 7 touchdowns on 7 possessions and like kept scoring. Like, they don't believe in pulling up. Like, but even if they put their backups in, okay, the NFL is harder to pull up than college, naturally, because I only have 46 active players. Seeing if I divide it right down the middle, 2023, let's say on offense, I'm carrying 23 active guys. Probably carrying 7 linemen, 8 linemen, so that's got 15 left. 2 extra quarterbacks, 13 left. Okay, so I have my starting 5 skill guys. I have 6 skill guys. Those guys are still NFL players. So especially on the Lions, I'll pull David Montgomery and put in Gibbs. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that doesn't really, it's not really a dip as far as effectiveness. And I'm not pulling my linemen. So at that point, if the line has been blowing you out the ball all day, the second running back is also really good. We're just going to keep scoring the ball. And it's kind of what the Detroit Lions do to people. So that should be an interesting game. Our second window, the battle of the backups, Tommy DeVito, Cooper Rush. The New York Giants are facing Dallas Cowboys. Again, the Cowboys are our traditional host. Again, another division game. The Giants at Cowboys. Now, this should be a fun one. The Giants don't seem to have quit. Malik Nabers has openly slandered the coach, which is not great, right? That's not good. That's not good. But figuratively, they don't seem to have quit. Now, the Buccaneers roll them. But the Buccaneers also are a team that would roll you if you give them the opportunity. And the Bucs absolutely rolled them. And so that's, you know, so that is a situation. And then the Cowboys, on the other hand, they have an opportunity to be irrationally confident. Because they went into Washington and they beat the Commanders. Now, it was a wild way to do it. It was an insane way to do it. Off the wall, does it make sense way to do it. However, they did it, right? And so, because of which, they have a confidence of, we beat the Commanders, we turn around and can beat the Giants. And then we're in a position where we're on a 2-game win streak with an extended week before our next ball game. I mean, these guys are professional athletes. While my brain could be saying they've got no chance, while the average fan could be saying, God, they've got no chance, right? I mean, no, they've got no chance, right? We all could be saying that, right? At the end of the day, right, regardless of if those athletes in there are irrational people, in order to be a professional athlete, you have to be irrational your whole life. You have to be irrational in high school. Yes, you could be a 4-star recruit, 5-star recruit in high school. You have to be irrational enough to go onto a team, more than likely, of a bunch of other 4- and 5-star recruits. Then be rational enough to have the belief in yourself that you're going to play. Then be rational enough to have yourself belief that you're going to, every day you train these crazy sessions, the coach yell at you and curse you out, and you're away from your family, all that stuff, it's going to be worth it. Then you have to be rational to put yourself in the draft, hire an agent to believe in you, go to training camp, repeat the process all over. Like, when you get to a professional athlete, you've probably been irrational about yourself since, logically, since you were about 6 or 7. So in a pro athlete getting a 2-game win streak, and in their heads, like, we're not mathematically out of this, they can charge from here. This is a huge game for the Cowboys. So huge, in fact, I'm going to pick them to win this game. Now, again, playing the Giants doesn't help. Doesn't hurt. But I'm going to pick them to win this game because I do think the Cowboys are just going to ramrod through this game. They're at home, which is probably the worst thing for them to be. But they're at home. They're coming off a big win against the Commanders. They're playing a Giants team that, if they haven't quit, they're teetering. And it's an opportunity for them to continue to roll right into greatness going into Week 14. And then the non-traditional slot, Dolphins at Packers, could be a very interesting game. Tua's been rolling since he's coming back from a concussion. Jordan Love and Josh Jacobs are hot for the Packers. This is a game that is not my Jags Packers, so I'm going to pick it. Due to the fact that it's a road game, I'm going to pick the Packers. If this game is in Miami, I might still pick the Packers, but my brain would probably lean to the Dolphins. It's on the road. It's in Green Bay. I'm not sure what the weather is going to be for this game, but I'm just going to bet Thanksgiving Day in Green Bay isn't warm. And we already seen how Tua performs in cold weather. Trying to get the weather update for it now. It is very reasonably priced tickets. It is going to be 28 degrees for game time. Clear skies. But 28 degrees. And we've already seen how Tua Tagovailoa and that Dolphins team performs in cold weather. 28 degrees is freezing, especially on the frozen tundra. The field's going to be wet because they heat the ground up, so it's going to be slippery all over the place. And so I've got the Packers here winning this game. It's only a 3.5-point spread. I think the Packers are going to dominate. Again, I've just seen the Dolphins in cold weather too many times. And it does get much more cold than the literal frozen tundra of Lambeau Field. So I've got the Packers here. Again, -3.5 you're expecting. This is my sixth game. I almost put in Jack's pack. I've got the Packers here. All right. The Steelers continue their march through the AFC North as they go on the road to the Bengals. Again, 9-9 Jack's pack. Again, a game that is vitally important for both sides. If you're the Pittsburgh Steelers, you have to get back on track. And yes, you just beat the Ravens, but I meant offensively. You won that game with 6 field goals. That's not going to work, right? Like, that's not going to. And then you were at home and kicked 6 field goals. I get it, it's the Ravens. I understand it's a division opponent. I get it. Sometimes you just ain't got it. But 6 field goals is not going to work. And then you look at the Cincinnati Bengals, same way I spoke about the Bears. This is the Bengals' last best shot. And Joe Burrow spoke about it a couple weeks ago, where he kind of did quick mental math on the podium and was like, 10 wins gets us in, so in order for us to do it, we're going to have to go 7 out of our last 9. And it was one of the more interesting things. It was the first time I can remember seeing a player do fan math, like, or amateur analyst math, as I call it, where you think like, okay, man, my team, I know 11 wins are getting us in. We got 5. Let's see if I can get 5 wins out of their schedule. See if we can get it. See 6 wins out of their schedule. See if we can get in. Like, he did it on the podium. He was just like, yeah, 10 wins should get us in. We got 3, 7 of our last 9. I think we can do it. And, like, you kind of tell, even in the room, the media members were like, yeah. Like, even the questions afterwards were a little off, because like, it's the first, like, I don't think anybody in the room, I know I didn't for sure, had, just watching the interview, had seen a player do what I would call fan math. Like, okay, yeah, this makes sense, boom, 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 boom. And it's like, yo, but again, this is effectively, they're in the playoffs already. That's why I don't like Zach Taylor. You're putting a really, really talented roster in a position where, well, I mean, the offensive line isn't great, but you're putting a fairly talented team in a position every year where they have to rip off this crazy run to even get into the playoffs. Joe Burrow is like first or second in like every passing category. Jamar Chase is on pace to win the triple crown in receiving, and they're like 4-7. You know, it's like, why are they going through this every single year? But they're gonna have to rip off a lot of wins in a row. I think they do it. I think that the Bengals get it done against the Steelers. I think they just outscore the Steelers in this one. Eagles at Ravens, huge game, huge game. Again, not Jack's pack. Eagles at Ravens is a big one. And it's a big one for a multitude of reasons. Number one, these are two of the top teams in their respective conferences. It could be a Super Bowl preview. The Eagles have the second or third best record in the NFC. Ravens are top four in the AFC, both coming off big wins. Eagles coming off their win where Saquon Barkley goes absolutely ballistic. And the Ravens come off their win where they dominate the Chargers in the second half of the game. The two top running backs in the league, Saquon Barkley and Derrick Henry, are going to go back and forth. Two of the top rushing attacks in the league when you add in their quarterbacks, Jalen Hurts and Lamar Jackson. You've got talented receivers on both sides, talented pass catchers on both sides. For the Eagles, you've got A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith if he's healthy. And then on the Ravens side, you've got Zay Flowers and Mark Andrews. Two very similar style defenses, both depend on good linebacker play, running around with their linebackers, and not the world's best secondaries. So this will be a very interesting game. This game looks very mirrored of each other. You're looking at two teams that look a lot like each other. And I'm going to go with the Ravens in this game purely because of home field. I think if this is a neutral site game, I may end up leaning Eagles. But I think that if Henry and Lamar get active early, I think it's going to be hard to keep them from going downhill in the bank. So I've got the Ravens winning this game. And then 49ers at the Bills. Not going to talk a lot about it because we don't have a Brock Purdy update, although he did have a minor throwing session recently. But the game is kind of hard to pick it. We don't know what Purdy's going to do. So we're not going to pick it. But it is a game for Josh Allen to get rolling, back rolling in the MVP discussion. We haven't seen him in a couple of weeks, and Saquon has done some greatness. But up next, we're going to talk about our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. Welcome back to the show. And now we're going to get into our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack, where we pick a five-pack of games against the spread every single week. With, again, our goal, and I haven't talked about it in a couple weeks, because I haven't really been on in a couple weeks, but haven't talked about it in a couple weeks. Our goal is to be 57%, 56 to 57% and above. If you hit that number, you are considered a professional gambler's ability, because if you do that, cover it a bunch of, don't want to go too far into the minutia, but it covers juice, it covers that, like, you pick all favorites all the time. Like, but if you hit 57%, you'll always come out with plus money. So we are sitting at 55% on the season, which I actually think is probably a little bit better, because I'm not sure how the ties are figured in, but I've counted like regular stuff. We are 55%, so we're just below the level of a professional gambler. I think it's a good thing. We're coming off a winning week, 3-2. I think 2-3 weeks. So we had a few 4-1 weeks put together. Then some 2-3s brought us back down. Now we're back positive with a 3-2 week. I feel really, really good about our numbers, and I haven't felt really, really good about the numbers in a while. I think this is a week where Vegas is kind of begging us to pick some sides, but we're going to go into games I know we're going to hit on. First one, my favorite one, my lock of the week. Lions minus 11 versus the Bears. Take the Lions. Remember, I spoke about the Lions already. They are designed, they are built, they are wired to blow people out, period. There is no conversation about it. They don't care about what you want to get done. They are there to blow people out. That is their entire purpose. They don't believe in backing off. They don't believe in, we're just going to run the ball. No, no. They are trying to blow people out. Period. And that's what they are trying to do. And that's what their goal is every single time. And I think that the Bears are going to be the latest victim. I don't see how the Bears scores 20 points in this game. And I just don't see how the Lions score anything less than 35. Like, I think the Lions are going to ramrod the Bears here. Now, it's a division game. It's on Thanksgiving. It feels like with being 11, that's two touchdowns, because touchdown and a field goal is still 10. I just think that the Lions are going to win this game by 14 to 17 points, and they easily cover the minus 11. Raiders plus 13.5 at the Chiefs. Take the Raiders. Chiefs will win the game. Raiders will win the point spread. The Chiefs are not designed to blow people out. They're not. And I knew that last week. I could have gone 4-1. I knew that last week. And I went against myself. Against my better judgment. As I was putting the pick in, I was saying it was wrong. And went against myself. And I could have been 4-1 last week. I just missed the Texans game. I admit that one. But I had the Chiefs right in my head and then changed it. I'm not going to fool with that. I'm not going to get fooled by that again. The Chiefs are not designed to blow people out. They just don't. There's certain teams every year where they just don't. Like, I don't know why. They just don't blow people out. And the Chiefs this year, it doesn't matter how much success they have. It doesn't matter how amazing they are. It doesn't matter how... It doesn't matter anything. It doesn't matter. They simply don't blow people out. It's actually wild how much they don't blow people out. Like, you would think at a certain point they would just get it. You know what I'm saying? Like, they would just understand how to do it. Like, they just don't. Like, it's so strange that a team that's 10-1, that a team that's, you know, Super Bowl champion and best quarterback in the league, best player in the league, best coach in the league, all this stuff, but one of the best defensive players in the league. Every game, it's, you know, look like it's 3 minutes left and they're either tied, down a field goal, up a field goal. And, like, that's just how the game goes. So I'm not going to fall into that trap again. I'm going to go Raiders plus 13.5. Oh, I didn't even see this game. My apologies, guys. I broke my own rule. But Bengals minus 3 versus Pittsburgh. Take the Bengals here. I didn't see it. You guys have already heard me expound on this game plenty of times. But I've got the Bengals here out of desperation. And I think something's going on with Pittsburgh's offense. Texans minus 5 at the Jags. This is a fading the Jags way more than it is picking the Texans. This is, I don't believe in Jacksonville at all, especially Mac Jones, as opposed to how much I love CJ Stroud, which I do, and the Houston Texans. In order for the Texans to cover this spread, they only have to win by 5. 16-10 is 6. 10-3 is 7. Like I said, I'm not picking this game for Houston. I'm basically picking against Jacksonville. And I'm going to continue to do that. So I've got Texans minus 5 at the Jags. And then my last game, a game that's important. Again, that's vitally important. I'm still riding the Jaden Daniels hype train all the way to the rookie of the year. The MVP has sailed. But all the way to the rookie of the year. Commanders minus 5.5 at the Titans. Again, very similar situation. Fading the Titans juxtaposed to picking the Commanders. I know the Cliff Kingsbury post-Halloween thing. I told you guys about it. I know it. I know that Tennessee just came off a hell of a win against the Houston Texans. I understand that Washington came off a crushing loss. I understand. But what that fourth quarter showed Washington that their offense can work. That their offense can work. Now, their defense was just as bad. Specifically, their special teams gave up 2 touchdowns and a missed extra point in the fourth quarter. I totally understand. But their offense can work. And that's what that fourth quarter showed me. Hopefully, it showed them. Remember that irrationality we talked about with the Cowboys? The Commanders have pro athletes, too. They're just as irrational. So, I mean, look at Jaden Daniels. He was a starter at Arizona State, trench-in starter, and had the irrational idea of going from Arizona State to LSU to just, like, to try and become better. Like, most guys as a starter don't leave a program to go be a starter on a program that's not ready to win a natty. Like, Caleb Downs left Bama to go to Ohio State. Okay, that's a different story. Jaden Daniels was on no one's draft board when he left Arizona State. So to go to LSU, probably without a promise he'd start, because Nussmeier was there. They had other guys there. And then he still, you know what I'm saying, he turns out what he turns out. So irrationality runs in the bloodline of a pro athlete. And I think they just beat the Titans here. Again, this is a fading Will Levis. Okay, Will Levis scored 32. His team scored 32 this week. They might not score 12. I think the Commanders get 24, which to cover, that means that the Titans got to be under 18. I think that's possible. Actually, 18 is fine because that's six. Nope. Yeah, that's six. So under 19. I think that's possible. Highly possible. So to go through the picks again, Lions minus 11 over the Bears, Raiders plus 13 and a half over the Chiefs, Bengals minus 3 over the Steelers, Texans minus 5 over the Jags, Commanders minus 5.5 over the Titans. But up next, we are going to leave the NFL and shift into the NBA and talk about what's going down with the association. Welcome back to the show, and now we're going to talk about what's happening in the explosive association right now, the NBA. We've got players going off, media members tripping, teams exploding, players going to get 50 pieces. Stuff's happening all over the place. Let's get into it. So let's start off with the explosions with Fred VanVleet. If you guys haven't seen his explosive tirade on the way off the floor, including calling a referee a female dog, has been widely shown. Fred VanVleet was then fined $50,000 for this outburst. Now he's going to make about $45 million this year. Cash flow wise, probably in endorsements, it's going to make over 30 for sure. So it is not necessarily hurting his pockets, but he was fined $50,000 and $50,000 for his post-game remarks to the official after he was ejected. Can't have that kind of stuff in the NBA. It's just, it is what it is. One of those situations, while he may feel that way, that's something you can't yell at him on the court. Remember Kelly Oubre, epic tirade after he was, I think he was ejected. I think it was just a bad foul call. He was like, he called the whole crew the same word, female dogs, and then like went to their family members. It was insane, right? All time rant by Kelly Oubre on that one. But Fred VanVleet again fined $50,000 for his comments. Speaking of fines, the Atlanta Hawks received a $100,000 fine for violating the player participation policy of the NBA surrounding Trae Young not playing in an NBA Cup game versus the Boston Celtics, which after an independent investigation was conducted, it was shown that Young could have played based on the player policy, which resulted in the fine. And the player participation policy is basically the anti-rest rule or anti-load management rule, except they left a lot of exceptions. So, like, for instance, Joel Embiid can load manage all he wants this year, same way with Kawhi. Like, because they came into the year, they had a serious injury the year before, or came into the year injured, they, like, don't have to follow the participation rules. It stops stuff like San Antonio used to do the old thing, where it was like, oh, Pop would get pissed off at the NBA. Okay, so a national televised game, and we, you know, they were the one seed already, so it wasn't killing them. But the national televised game against Oklahoma City, Duncan, Ginobili, Parker, Aldridge, all not gonna play, and like all, and then all the things are old, and Pop just laughs, and it was just like, yep, they're not gonna play tonight. So your national TV TNT showcase game where you're gonna have everybody watch, it's gonna have no Spurs in it. Congratulations. Like, it was just, it sort of, it stops that, but in the spirit of true load management, it doesn't stop anything because of the many exceptions in the rule. But ultimately, the Hawks were fined $100,000 for this. Speaking of injuries, stars are coming back from injury. The Durant and Beal combination of the Phoenix Suns will return tonight. So they are on the floor, expected to return tonight versus the Los Angeles Lakers. So big situation for them. And I believe it is NBA Cup night. So that is huge for the Suns, not only in the regular season, but again, for the NBA Cup. Yes, it is NBA Cup night. So they are expected to be back. The Suns are, I think, like 1-something. Since Kevin Durant went down, 1-6, I believe, since Kevin Durant went down, 8-1 with him. So huge for the Phoenix Suns. Ja Morant came back explosively last night after missing 8 games due to a hip injury. He explosively returned last night. And Lonzo, this just in, Lonzo Ball is expected to return tomorrow night following, because he's been out with a wrist injury. So he, you know, he, of course, he was out for years with the knee problem. But he is expected to return for the Chicago Bulls on tomorrow. So that'll help the Bulls out, even though they're going through their own turmoil, because the Chicago Bulls reportedly are ready to start moving some of this roster. This roster has underachieved, to be kind. And now it appears that the Bulls are ready to say, okay, we've tried. We really did, but it's time to move on. And so they are reportedly interested in dealing Nikola Vucevic, and they are reportedly interested in dealing Zach LaVine. Two players that should return a fair amount on the market, especially if you look at like LaVine to loss to the Lakers. You know, they could use another score, or Vucevic to the Lakers. So guy to protect Anthony Davis, Vucevic to New Orleans. Contractually, you probably have to move a couple of the ancillary pieces, but Vucevic to New Orleans could be something as well. Trying to think where LaVine could go. He's injury prone with his knee, so his value is down. His contract is large. So that could be a hindrance to moving a Zach LaVine, which is why DeMar DeRozan was able to land in Sacramento. So instead of a LaVine being moved, but Chicago's pretty want to move on. It is what it is at this point. Grant Williams has suffered a torn ACL. His season is over. Unfortunate for him and that Hornets team, as he was kind of carving out a pretty decent role in Charlotte after being moved to Dallas. That just didn't work. He was actually carving out a pretty decent role in Charlotte, but now his season is over. Okay, now we're due with that. Let's get to the Pelicans. Actually, no, I'm gonna say the Pelicans because I don't know how long I'm gonna go on that. There's been some big scoring outbursts. You see LaMelo Ball feel like he's exploding every other day, every other game with big outbursts, 30, 40 point moments, including innings. I mean, he's looking like he's playing Chino Hills basketball in the NBA. It's actually pretty wild to see. We all remember the little short, you know, they had some 5'11". The dude was like 5'6 in the 8th grade playing on that team, on Lonzo's undefeated team. Lonzo's senior year, then he was a little 5'11", 5'10", skinny kid who scored 92. Then he went to Australia and came back, you know, played that year at that postgraduate school or whatever academy that was in Illinois. And then he just kind of like faded into the ether because he was in Charlotte. And now he is healthy and ready to go, and he looks like the guy that we saw at Chino Hills, the kid that we saw could get a bucket anytime, anywhere with a pretty wild and loose style. He just played all over the place. So good for LaMelo. Good for Melo. You know, it's good for him in the NBA. Giannis, man. Giannis has decided about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, we're just not going to lose anymore. I don't care who comes with me. We're not going to lose anymore. And that's what you need. I think that we all know Doc Rivers coaching is leaves a lot to be desired. And so you need guys to just go, screw it, bro. We're not losing no more. And that was the attitude I think Giannis took. Screw it. We're not losing anymore. He's had enormous explosions since 40 and 17s. I think he went for a 50 piece rather recently. He's one of the best mid-range shooters in the NBA, which if you said that about Giannis, hell, 6 months ago, people would laugh at you. Hell, 3 months ago, people would laugh at you. Giannis, mid-range, yeah, whatever. And it's just, he's just refusing to lose. Now, Dame's joining the party. They're starting to get some of their pieces back as far as their rotation guys. Like, this is a situation where the Bucks may actually mess around. They're the third in the East now. Like, may mess around and turn this season around and save what looked like an abject disaster at the start of the season. Dalton Connect, He exploded. I think he has the he has more points than Jared McCain did. He has the highest single scoring game for a rookie this season. His efficiency is going through the roof. I was actually in the building on his first or second mini explosion when they were in New Orleans. I went to the game. And it was like every time from the if you're coming down the court left corner, don't connect, connect four, boom, connect four, boom, connect four, boom. It was like every time he went to that left corner, he was finding a home there. And he's unconscious. Like, he's a kid that when he gets to rolling, he's unconscious. There's nothing. Like, defense doesn't matter. Shot selection doesn't matter. Spot on the floor doesn't matter. When he hits one or two in a row, and you can just see, like, it's almost like he gets antsy. Like, give it back to me. I can get it up again. Boom. And kind of seeing it. You see it on TV. A guy, you know, you guys are like, fire connect, but... Like, in person, he really, like, it almost like he started shaking when he hit them two back-to-back, like, I'm hot, like, give it back to me. So, kudos to him. And then Wemby's clicking. He had that couple of weeks where he was one of the league's best three-point shooters. Now he's starting to dribble drive and get to the rim. The step-back three is starting to fall. Wemby's clicking. I told people Chris Paul was going to be huge for him. Just 8 points a game. He was going to add off a lob, or Wemby's going to slice cut, and Chris Paul's going to, you know, direct traffic and get it to him. And I said, if he goes from, I think he was 19 a night or something like that. And I just threw out very basic numbers of what I'm like, man, if he adds 8 points a game, keeps everything the same, he's league MVP. And so his rookie year, he was 21. 10 and 4. This year he's 22, 10 and 3. So his numbers actually a little down because he's about the same efficiency. His minutes per game has gone up, but it's early. I ultimately think he'll end up 26, 10 and 3. Not MVP, easily an all-star. Easily an all-star. Not MVP, easily an all-star. And he'll be a guy that has a candidacy for all the NBA. Like, and that's going to be huge for him. To his development. But anyway, the main reason I want to talk about the NBA, it's a little early to do standing, et cetera, et cetera. But the main reason I want to talk about the NBA is the New Orleans Pelicans. My New Orleans Pelicans. Let's talk about it. So, Pelicans drama left and right. So, Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson, within days of each other, are no longer with their agencies. You know, there was a mix of reasons why. One reason was saying that both agencies wanted them out of New Orleans, and both players said no, pretty much, and we're going to stay, and got rid of their agencies. The Brandon Ingram agent situation stems to not getting the deal done with New Orleans, and so he got rid of his agencies. Zion Williamson's case, potentially, that was something that there was reports that were saying that, oh, it's because he wanted out, and they were saying stay. Or he was saying stay and they were saying out. Regardless, both Pelican stars have split from their agencies. Like I said, within days of each other. That's not a coincidence. And it adds a whole nother thing. And then I don't like to call people stupid. So I'm not going to call him stupid. I'm going to say what he said was stupid. Tim McMahon said something very, very stupid on ESPN. He said, and I quote, "The New Orleans Pelicans should look into cutting Zion Williamson. The contract was meant to be cut," and I'm paraphrasing, piecing together. Tim McMahon, dude, I listen to you every week. You're one of the reasons I listen to the Hoop Collective. If it's not Windhorse, McMahon, and Bond Temps, probably not listening. I'll do Mark J. Spears. I'll do Ohm if the Clippers are really good. And of course, Holly Rowe, you know, and then of course, Ramona Shelburne. But I mainly listen when there's Bond Temps, McMahon, and Wendy. That's the group. And I love hearing McMahon speak. This was stupid. This was really stupid. And his reason was like, Zion Williamson's all IAS. It's always something. I agree. it feels like it's always a report, or it's always an injury, or during the injury, the rehab's slow, the rehab's fast. Rehab's on time, he wants to be in New York. He always wanted to be a Knick. Maybe not really. His agent wants him gone. But like it is always feels like a story, or a break, or an upkeep, or something with Zion Williamson. But releasing a guy that when he is healthy is a perennial all-star level player, releasing a guy that when he is healthy is someone that just this season was 22-8-5, last season was 23-5-5, the year before that was 26-7-5. Like, I get it. And you look at the games played and you see 24. And you see 61, not bad, not great, but you see 61. That year he was 27-7-4. The next year is 29. The next year it's 70 on 31.5 a night. And he had an odd hamstring injury that kind of came out of nowhere. And that he was the lightest he'd ever been. And it was just a freaking hamstring injury that happens to people. Now, conflicting reports on that situation. Shams Charania is saying, oh, the Pelicans said 4 to 6 weeks, or the report was 4 to 6 weeks. He's getting injections. People on the TV was like, well, if he's getting injections, he's a lot further off than 4 to 6 weeks. Because every time you get an injection, it resets your clock. So if he's had 3 injections, it keeps resetting that 4 to 6 weeks. So he's 4 to 6 weeks from the last injection. Then people on the Pelican side are going, well, who told him 4 to 6 weeks? So now you got a guy like Zion looking bad for not sticking to a timeline that wasn't a timeline the team publicly put out. Because the team put out that it was going to be an extended time. He was going to be out indefinitely. That's what the team put out. Then Shams reported 4 to 6 weeks, but potentially longer. Then about a week ago, a few days ago, he goes, oh, the Pelicans are prepared for Zion to be out an extended period of time. That was always the original message from the team, was that he's out indefinitely with this hamstring injury. Like, the national media, and they do this, they crap on small markets. They do it with the Saints. The Saints are in no worse position than the Jets and the Giants. And yet, you would imagine the Saints should tear that thing down to brass tacks. And yet, if the Jets just get one player, they could be really good. They're in the same spot. New Orleans is in a very similar spot of Memphis. Because John Morant is missing a lot of games for either basketball or non-basketball related reasons. And yet, people just say, Ja gotta get that together. But then Memphis can be really good. They're not saying, but well, if Ja was in New York. Like, it's just so stupid. It's dumb. And I just don't like the way that the Pelicans are being covered. Yes, could Willie Green's rotations be a little bit better? Yes, could the season be teetering on the verge of lost already before Thanksgiving? Potentially. But when you put that roster together, Zion comes back healthy, they can make a run and sneak into the play-in. If that team gets in the play-in, I feel bad for whoever's in that play-in spot with them, because they're going to be held to play. But ultimately, that's what's going down with the association. Up next, we're going to shift to our college football two-minute drill. Welcome back into the show, and now we are going to investigate and have, of course, the college football two-minute drill. And you know how this guy works, 2 minutes on the clock, we get as much college football information in as possible in under 2 minutes. So, timer has been set, ready, and go. Colorado had control of their own destiny. University of Colorado, Colorado University, led by Deion Sanders, had control of their own destiny. However, they blew it, getting smashed literally by Kansas, physically smashed by Kansas, who played a very physical game and all but ended Colorado's playoff hopes. Now, Colorado does have a path in. They need to win a BYU loss and a somebody else loss, they can get in the Big 12 title game, win the Big 12 title game, and they're in the college football playoff anyway. Although Deion Sanders has said that Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders both will play in the bowl game. So big news for college football fans in general, as you will see them at some point in a standalone game and in Colorado uniform. The 12-team playoff has been a blessing and a curse, because now you're discussing how many teams each conference gets in. You're discussing, wait, why does that three-loss SEC team get in when that one-loss Big Ten team is being told they're out? Like, you're getting all these different narratives going across the country. It's going to be incredibly interesting to see. Me personally, put three SEC schools in, put three Big Ten schools in, Group of Five champion is in, probably looks like it's like Tulane right now. Group 5 champion gets in, put in two ACC schools, two, three Big 12 schools, play it out. Because, I mean, that's also what you need, in my opinion. You need it to where it's fairly balanced, and we see who comes out on top. And we'll see how that goes. But it has been a massive controversy throughout the entire thing. Of course, the Heisman Trophy has come down to two people, Travis Hunter or it is Ashton Dente. To me, it's not a contest. It's easily Travis Hunter. For some reason, I don't know how being really, really good at one position is somehow better than being really, really good at two positions. But whatever. Mack Brown has been fired by the University of North Carolina. He would not return after this last game, even though he publicly said that he wanted to get in. And the recruiting wars have been brutal as Michigan flipped the number one player through NIL, and more is continuing to happen. Oh, the 2-minute timer has gone off. Spent way too much time on Colorado in the playoff there, but it happens. But that is all I have for the day. It's one of our longer shows you've had in a while. For those of you who are new and stuck with it all the way through, welcome into the Just in Time Sports family. Usually we're not this long-winded, usually about 45 minutes, 50 minutes. However, missing last week definitely put more emphasis on this one. And of course, a lot of NBA stuff went down over the past week or so. But as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just in Time Sports Podcast or wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, don't forget to follow at JTime Sports on all your favorite social medias. This is your host, Justin Jackson, signing out. Thank you.